And during the interval, Paul Allen examines how, despite losing the war, the Trojans have shaped Western culture. This is BBC Radio 3, 90 to 93 FM on digital radio. You can also listen to us live online in high-definition sound. It's 1 o'clock, time for the news read by Lopa Kotari.
Syrian government troops have launched a big offensive to regain control of parts of the capital, Damascus. Activists say three areas of the city are being attacked by tanks and heavy weapons. In the second city, Aleppo, rebel fighters are reported to have gained control of several areas. A new study suggests that at least £13 trillion is invested in secret tax havens by the super-rich around the world. The report was written by James Henry, a former chief economist at the consultancy firm McKinsey, for the Tax Justice Network, which campaigns for what it calls a socially just tax system. Mr. Henry says the tax revenues lost through such offshore accounts is large enough to make a significant difference to the finances of many countries. The people of Norway are attending ceremonies and church services in memory of the 77 people killed by Anders Behring Breivik a year ago. Many of them were teenagers attending a summer camp on the island of Utøya near Oslo. The country's Prime Minister, Jens Stoltenberg, has laid a wreath at the spot in Oslo where a bomb exploded, killing 8 people. He said Breivik had failed in his attempt to destroy Norway's democratic values. The Culture Secretary Jeremy Hunt has urged immigration staff to call off a one-day strike on Thursday, a day before the Olympics open. He said the timing of the action over jobs and pay was extraordinary. The leader of PCS Union, Mark Sirotka, said he hoped the walkout could be averted. Barring accident or illness, the cyclist Bradley Wiggins will ride himself into history this afternoon by becoming the first British rider to win the Tour de France. Convention dictates that no one will challenge the race leader on the 20th and final stage into Paris. And the weather, it's another sunny and warm day for much of England and Wales, although it'll become increasingly breezy across more northern areas. It'll be cloudy across Northern Ireland and Scotland, with outbreaks of rain, mainly in western parts, and a strong southwesterly wind. That's the latest BBC News. The time is 1:02.
And it was read by Lopa Kotari. Well, now on Radio 3, today's Early Music Show, which features more from this year's York Early Music Festival. It's introduced by Catherine Bott.
In the mid-1670s, Jesuit missionaries set sail from Spain for the jungles of Bolivia. In their luggage, lots of sacred music to help them in their task of converting the indigenous population to Christianity. The locals were eager to learn and to sing and play, and from the collaboration of Bolivian converts and European clerics arose a new musical style, a fusion of cultures called Mission Baroque. And in 2012, the fruits of that fusion were heard in the north of England, performed by Ashley Solomon's group Florilegium and the singers of the Aracaendar Bolivia Choir.
Oh, yeah.
Thou crowned him with glory and honour, O Lord, and didst set him over the works of thy hands. Words from Psalm 8, set by the Czech composer Johann Josef Ignaz Brentner, whose music found its way to South America to help Bolivian Indians worship a Christian god. That piece opened the concert given in the 2012 York Early Music Festival by the Aracaenda Bolivia Choir and Florilegium, directed by Ashley Solomon. The next composer featured in the concert was Juan de Araujo, who was born in 1646 in Spain, but spent most of his working life in Bolivia as maestro di capilla of the cathedral in La Plata, modern-day Sucre. A typical Spanish villancico, or popular song, with a rhapsodical sacred text about the infant Jesus asleep in the manger, a tiny baby born to save the world. The Aracaenda Bolivia Choir, including a multitasking singer providing a little percussion, and members of Florilegium, with a sacred villancico by Juan de Araujo, Si el Amor. Next, an organ solo played by Terence Charleston, the toccata in D minor by Domenico Zippoli, who had a whole early music show to himself a while back. He was an Italian whose spiritual quest took him from composer about Rome to Jesuit missionary in Argentina.
Thank you.
Zipoli's Toccata in D minor, played by Terence Charleston. The concert, given by Florilegium and the Aracaendar Bolivia Choir, took place in the Church of St Michael the Belfry, next to York Minster, and it was obvious throughout the day that the collaboration is a very happy one. Here's Florilegium's director, Ashley Solomon, talking to me before the rehearsal.
It's an extraordinary story because they didn't exist as a choir before. I went to Bolivia to audition singers to form a chamber choir in order to present some of the masses that had recently been discovered in the archives in the mission churches of the Mochos and Chiquitos Indians. And then I was told by Piotr Navrot about these masses by Bassani that he'd discovered, and they needed a choir. And so I said, well, we could find a choir in Bolivia and put singers together, that would be perfect. And so I went out to Bolivia to audition a number of choirs that were established there. Didn't feel that any of them were appropriate for the work that I wanted to do, so cherry-picked the best singers who came for audition from all over the country, put them together and started working with this choir. And then we came up with a name because it was such an exciting project that was going to run for a while, that we thought we must have a name that will be associated with the choir, which is unique. And because it's in one of the indigenous languages, the word Aracaenda means ancient in Guarani, it sort of stuck.
Well, it may be an ancient choir, but I've met some of them now. They're vibrant young people, and it's obvious that you've all become very good friends. You go to Bolivia quite a lot, don't you?
I do. I used to go 8 times a year for a week at a time to work with them. I can't do that anymore, so I go 4 times a year. And otherwise, the choir work together when I'm not there. The youngest member of the choir is 19, and the oldest is around 26, 27. I have to stress that they're not professional singers. You can't really be a professional singer in Bolivia. So when I started the choir in 2005, some of the members who are now the older members of the choir were studying. There's a qualified doctor, there's an engineer, there are a couple of lawyers in the choir who, that is their job, but they have this passion to sing music from their missions and their archive. And they sing it with a sense of pride that is very touching. And it's an infectious disease. I've said this in a number of interviews, that it's in my bloodstream, and however hard I try to get it out of my bloodstream, I can't. It's very much part of my life now.
Ashley Solomon. The big centrepieces of this concert were two mass settings by Giovanni Battista Bassani, born in Padua in 1650, a man whose whole working life was spent in the world of Italian church music, in places like Bologna, Ferrara and Bergamo. I guess it's more than likely that he never knew how greatly loved his music would become half a world away in Bolivia. This is his Missa alla Fuga.
Thank you. Grazie.
Bassani's Missa alla Fuga, performed by the Arca Endar Bolivia Choir and Florilegium, directed by Ashley Solomon. You're listening to The Early Music Show with me, Catherine Bott, and highlights of a concert from the 2012 York Early Music Festival. When the Jesuits were expelled from Bolivia in 1767, their music stayed behind to become a sort of time capsule. 4 years ago, Ashley Solomon was the first European to be awarded the Bolivian Hans Roth Prize in recognition of the enormous assistance he's given to Bolivian native Indians, especially the promotion and preservation of their music. Let's hear more from him about the music now.
To be told about an archive of music that exists in 12,500 pages of manuscript from the 18th century is an extraordinary thing to comprehend. The fact that this music was kept safe by the Indians when the Jesuits were expelled in Bolivia in 1767 meant that it was very much something that they realised the importance of. And it's only in the last 15 years that we have been allowed to see this music. Piotr Navrat gained the trust of the elderly people in the village in Chiquitania. The influences from Europe, some of the probably the better known composers like Tsipouli and Bassani, were taken over by the Jesuit missionaries in the first place as a form of evangelization. The Indians knew about God, not the God that we know about, the God that, you know, Christians and Jews believe in, but they knew about a God. And the Jesuits decided that the best way of converting them to the God that they wanted to be converted about was not by talking to them, because they spoke Indian languages and the Jesuits didn't speak Indian languages. But they thought through music they could help convert them. And so they use music to evangelize and use music to praise God and then encourage the Indians to write music based on the European examples that they took with them. But there's a different sense to this missional Baroque, because like the architecture in the missions, when you go to visit the churches, they're very naively constructed. There's very few minor keys. It's a happy outlook on music and evangelization, I suppose. A lot of the music that we've been singing and performing with Florilegium and Arca Endar are by anonymous composers, simply because the local Indians were taught to compose music for the glory of God, not for the glory of themselves. So it doesn't matter who they were, they put anonymous there because it was for the greater good.
Ashley Solomon. The 17th century Jesuits encountered 5 different local languages in Bolivia. It must have been quite an achievement getting everyone singing in Latin. I was impressed by the Arca Endar Choir's clear diction and their fresh sound, as they too sang in Latin throughout the concert. Until their encore, by the way, there's a delicious treat coming up at the end of the show. Next, 2 anonymous pieces, the composers, probably local, certainly encouraged to believe that the glory of God mattered more than having their own names on the manuscripts. First, the choir unaccompanied in Stella Cieli, a devotional hymn to Mary, Star of the Sea. And then they're joined by Florilegium in an exhortation to faithful souls to head for the gate of salvation, Ea Fidelis. anonymous vocal pieces from the Jesuit missions in Bolivia. Among the instrumental works in this concert was a trio sonata by the Milanese composer Ignazio Balbi, a work given a Bolivian name when it was copied for use in the missions, Sonata Chiquitanas. Sonata Chiquitanas No. 9 by Balbi, played by Florilegium. This exhilarating performance with the Arcaenda Choir ended with another anonymous piece, which summed up not only the original Jesuit project, but also the joy that the young Bolivian singers obviously took in representing their country at the York Early Music Festival. Cantemus Domino, let us sing unto the Lord.
Cantemus, cantemus, cantemus Domino.
the Aracaenda Bolivia Choir and Florilegium ending their York concert with an anonymous Cantemus Domino. Well, I said ending, but the audience wanted more. So first, Florilegium obliged with an arrangement of a traditional tune taught to them when they first went to Bolivia by one Don Januario. And finally, as a second encore, we heard the Aracaenda Bolivia Choir in the traditional music of Bolivia, with the addition of percussion and one of the singers playing the charango, a little guitar. To end today's early music show, this is a song about how love is like an orange, sometimes sweet, sometimes sour. Naranjitai.
Mañana por la mañanita, ay, te veo.
Arakayendar Choir with Naranjitai. And it ends today's early music show. It was presented by Catherine Bott and produced in Salford by Sam Phillips.
The 2012 BBC Proms. Les Troyens at the BBC Proms. An astonishing score, the summation of a life's work in music and a work the composer himself never heard complete. The cast of the Royal Opera's new production reunites under the music director Sir Antonio Pappano in a concert performance of Berlioz's epic opera. Berlioz's Troy story, Les Troyens, the Trojans at the BBC Proms. This afternoon and evening from 4:30 on BBC Radio 3.
And if you need a brief crash course on Berlioz's opera, our Proms Plus feature in 45 minutes' time brings a discussion on the Trojans with the help of musicians performing in the Prom. Proms Plus is at 3:15. This is BBC Radio 3. It's just gone 2 o'clock. Time now for the next programme in our series featuring Radio 3's starry lineup of new generation artists. The presenter is Clemency Burton-Hill.
Hello, and thanks for joining me for this afternoon's New Generation Artists special, which is an all Chopin extravaganza from one of Britain's most exceptional young pianists, Benjamin Grosvenor. Benjamin, who's recently celebrated his 20th birthday, first came to the world's attention aged just 11 when he won the keyboard category of BBC Young Musician of the Year. He's since graced some of the world's most important concert platforms, giving a memorable performance at the first night of the Proms last year and embarking on a North American concert tour earlier this year that had many critics in raptures. Benjamin has been on the New Generation Artists scheme since 2010, during which time he's had the opportunity to explore a range of repertoire, as well as develop his familiarity with the recording studio and immerse himself in the world of chamber music. This afternoon, though, it's his solo work that we're focusing on, and in particular his reading of Frédéric Chopin. We'll be hearing the Polish master's second concerto shortly, but to whet our appetite, we begin with the Mazurka in D. So here he is, BBC New Generation artist Benjamin Grosvenor. Chopin's Mazurka in D, performed by BBC New Generation artist Benjamin Grosvenor. Well, Benjamin's pretty hard to pin down these days, but I managed to catch up with him recently as he prepared for a Radio 3 InTune Proms special to find out why Chopin is so central to his repertoire who his biggest inspirations are, and to hear about the highlights of his time on the New Generation Artists scheme.
It's been a great 2 years, really. I mean, I've done so much, which has helped me grow as a musician. It's a wonderful time in the studio. I think probably the highlight for me has been the chamber music I've done. I haven't done as much as I would have liked to have done, to be honest. But I had a wonderful session recording Brahms with the Elias Quartet. And just the other day, I was playing Brahms with the Escher Quartet, which was at the Cheltenham Festival for the BBC. So for me, that's been the highlight.
Do you think you'll do more chamber music in the future now?
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah.
Your time on the scheme has coincided with an extraordinary moment for you in terms of your career. How important has it been to be exploring the sorts of things you've been doing whilst on the scheme at the same time as forging this very tremendous solo career?
Well, as I mentioned, the importance of the chamber music, but I think the scheme's also been very helpful for me to get me used to playing to microphones, which of course, when I came to do my debut disc with Decca, I had started the scheme that previous September. So I'd already done a session in the studio and I'd already done some live recitals for the BBC. So I mean, it's sort of a very different experience to playing in a studio to microphones, and also playing to an audience, but also being aware that the microphones are there is something different as well.
What are the challenges of being in the recording studio rather than a live performance?
The BBC have given me lots of recording experience over the years, but still I find that really, I feel most at home on the concert stage. I think on the concert stage is a kind of electricity which comes from the atmosphere and from the interaction with the audience, and which perhaps can't be so easily found in the studio. I think a certain kind of electricity can be found in the studio as long as one doesn't allow the ability to do many takes of the same piece, as long as this doesn't cause you to produce a kind of homogenised interpretation of that work. I think in the studio you should always be trying different things and try to keep it fresh. But I think the kind of BBC process of recording, when you go into one of the things I've done in Maidabel, it's more than the commercial recordings I've done. It's more performance-based, and not so much editing is done. And so not so much is lost, potentially, I think, by that process.
Chopin is clearly a very important composer to you. Why are you so drawn to his music?
Chopin's music, some of the first sort of real music that I learned was by Chopin. When I started the piano at the age of 6, and was with a Chopin waltz that my mother realised I had some kind of talent for the piano. She gave me the piece, and I seemed to have a greater emotional understanding. So Chopin's been something which has been central to my repertoire since the age of 8. Of course, it's very accessible music, so I think for a young person like that, it's easy to get into it because of the wonderful melodies, but there's so much emotion there, the most heartfelt emotions. And I think Chopin as a composer, really, more than any other, made the piano sing.
He's played by every pianist. Are there big challenges in terms of finding something new to say?
I don't think anyone should go out of the way to find something new to say, but it's something that comes naturally. Chopin is a composer which is very personal to everyone. I think more than many other composers, he's a composer, everyone has their own way of how Chopin should be played, which maybe is something to do with the sort of singing style of the music. It comes so much from the heart, the idea of having a long melodic line. I don't go out my way to do so, but hopefully I do find something unique there.
Who are your biggest inspirations when it comes to Chopin?
I would say Courtauld, Mazeevich, Horowitz, Rubinstein. And then also I'm playing some mazurkas, and I think a pianist who really was immersed in the kind of Polish, had the kind of Polish rhythm when he played this kind of music was Ignaz Friedman. So he's a pianist I greatly admire as well. All of these pianists are sort of the pianist of the golden age, of the golden era of piano playing. And all of them really understood this way of making the piano sing.
We're hearing you playing some of Chopin's smaller works, like the mazurkas, but we're about to hear you play the second piano concerto in F minor. What does that piece mean to you?
It's a piece I first played. It's another one of these pieces which I played when I was rather young. I played it at the Albert Hall. It was my debut there at the age of 13. So once again, it's a piece that kind of has that kind of personal significance in my career and my life. I think that for me, the second movement of that concerto is probably one of my favourite few minutes of music of all time.
How did you find working with the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra and Leo Hussein?
That was my first studio session with an orchestra, actually, which was very fun. But of course, when you're planning doing a studio recording like that with an orchestra, there's always the issue of time, and it tends to be quite rushed. No, it was a wonderful experience.
Well, let's hear it now. Chopin's Piano Concerto No. 2 in F minor. BBC New Generation artist Benjamin Grosvenor is joined by the BBC Scottish Symphony Orchestra and conductor Leo Hussein.